We are on the top of 7:16. Hopefully today we're going to finish the Teichacha. Okay, and move on. We're almost finished with Chumash Vayikra, by the way. Okay, we're in the middle of this pasuk. Zochart Yis Brisi Yaakov, Vafes Brisi Yitzchak, Vafes. The top of 7:16. Hashem says, with regard to all the curses, Hashem said, I'm going to remember the covenant of Yaakov, Yitzchak, and Avram. I remember, I'm going to remember everything. So we discussed a few things, why the names of the Ovis are backwards, starting from Yaakov, and then Yitzchak, and then Avram. And Rashi says, the reason is because, even in the merit of Yaakov is enough, and definitely in the merit of Yitzchak, and definitely in the merit of Avram. And it goes, like we said, Yaakov had good parents and good grandparents. Yitzchak had good parents, not great grandparents. Avram had nothing, so it's going from lower to higher. But and also we spoke about the extra vav that Yaakov Avinu took the collateral, the mashkin from Eliyahu Navi. Okay, but Rashi adds one more thing over here, which is very interesting. If you notice, it says like this: V'zachart is b'risi Yaakov. I'm going to remember the covenant of Yaakov. Va'afes brisi Yitzchok, in the covenant with Yitzchok. Va'afes brisi Avram Esker. And I remember Avram. So it's a balatum, but Rashi really says it too. Why is it that by Yaakov it says the word V'zacharti, I'll remember? By Avram it says Esker, I'll remember, but not by Yitzchok. But Yitzchok doesn't say remember. It says, I remember Yaakov. And the covenant of Yitzchak, but doesn't use the word remembrance. And then Avram again says the word remembrance. So Rashi says, why is it that by Yitzchak it doesn't use the word remembrance? So Rashi says that V'lomalei namer schida b'Yitzchak. Why doesn't it say the word remembering by Yitzchak? Because the ashes of Yitzchak are always on the Mizbeach. Hashem says, I don't need to remember it, it's always in front of me. It's always in front of me. So in fact, at the TLC this morning, it was discussed, the question is, but Yitzchak wasn't brought. Rashi says, the ashes of Yitzchak are always constantly in the presence of Hashem. It's bound and munach ala mizbeach. But Yitzchak didn't get killed. Right? How could you say the ashes of Yitzchak when Yitzchak's ashes are not on the Mizbeach? So you could answer that it means the ram of Yitzchak, which is in the stead of Yitzchak, that's what the pasuk means. But it says in the Zohar, as mentioned in the TLC this morning, it's mentioned in the Zohar, believe it or not, that on the Akedah Yitzchak died. Avram didn't shecht him. But, in other words, Hashem said, bring him up as a sacrifice. Yitzchak died. And Hashem was Mechaya Mason. Hashem resurrected him. So in that respect, even the ashes of Yitzchak are on the Mizbeach. So therefore, the Torah doesn't need to use the word, I'll remember, because something which is in front of your face, you don't need to remember. And therefore, the pasuk doesn't use the word remembrance by Yitzchak. Okay, then the pasuk says like this.
And he's saying that he will remember the land.
The land will remember, right.
Meaning he'll remember Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov and remember the land.
What it means is he'll remember the land. Mefarshim explained it means like this. Because Eretz Yisrael is holy, we learned it doesn't tolerate evil. Right? As soon as the evil stops, so the earth becomes holy again, and the people come back to the land. So this, what Hashem is saying over here, the Zachayat is B.C. Yitzchak, and this whole thing, is if the Jews do tshuva. So even though we learned there wasn't a real complete tshuva, nevertheless Hashem says, I'm going to remember the covenant anyway. And I'm going to remember the land, because the holiness does not permit to tolerate sinners. The second the Jews do tshuva, Hashem is going to bring the Jews back to Eretz Yisrael. So that's what he means. He's going to remember the land. Okay, then he says like this. What is Tiazev, ma'am? This is still, like, in the middle is a break with a good pasuk, and now it goes, not, I mean, it's a funny word to use, with a positive pasuk, and then goes back to the curse. What is Tiazev, ma'am? The land will be reft of them, meaning get rid of them. Vesiris is Shapsi Seho, and it's going to be a peace for sabbaticals, because we learned the sin was because the Jews didn't keep the Shemitah. But Shama Mehem, when they became desolate of them, Vehem Yirtzu Saveinam, they must gain appeasement for their sin, for the sins. Yan Ubayan, it literally means because and because. B'mishpate Ma'asu, they revolted against my Mishpatim, my ordinances, Veschukesai, and my decrees, Gola Nafshim, they rejected him. So it says, because the earth, I'm going to remember the earth, but I want you to know that the earth is going to be upset with them, throw them off the land. But Yan Ubayan, the Ebenezer says, this is the double expression. Why does it say Yan Ubayan, because and because? Because one is, they didn't keep the ordinances, and they didn't keep the decrees. Because the pasuk says two things, Mishpatem and Chukaisai. They both didn't keep either of them. So because of that, the people were exiled because of two separate conditions. They didn't keep Hashem's Mishpatem, the logical mitzvahs. They didn't keep the illogical mitzvahs. They didn't do anything of that. Okay, now the pasuk says like this. And here you see an unbelievable relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people. V'av gamzeis, despite all of this, v'yesem b'yeretzim eivayim, while they're in the land of their enemies, when they're in Golus, thrown out of Eretz Yisrael because of all their sins, Hashem says, le'ma'astim, I haven't been revolted by them, v'le'ga'altim, I never rejected them, l'chaleisim, to destroy them, l'hofer b'risi itam, to annul my covenant with them, I'm still your God. And this is a remarkable thing. Hashem says, listen, I throw you out of the land, I destroyed your Beis HaMikdash, I did everything to you, but I didn't destroy you. Okay? In fact, in Tilim, it says over there, one of the Kapitlach in Tilim talks about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. It says, Mizma LeYosef. Mizmal Asaf, a song for Asaf, one of the composers of Tilim, right? So the Gemara says, what do you mean Mizmar? It speaks about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. It should say Kina La Asaf, a lamentation for Asaf. What do you mean a Mizmar, a song? So the Gemara says, the song is that God destroyed buildings and he didn't destroy the Jewish people. And this is what the Pasuk is saying here. As bad as you were, that I punished you and I made you every power, you know, every sickness and everything, but never did the Torah say, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to wipe you out. The relationship between Hashem and the Jew is so strong, as the Gemara uses the expression, Kila Chamasa Leitzim V'Alavanim. Hashem let out his anger on stones and wood, the Beis HaMikdash, but he didn't let it out to the Jewish people. And as we learned, that's why Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't go into Eretz Yisrael. Because if Moshe Rabbeinu would have gone into Eretz Yisrael, he would have built the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara says, anything Moshe Rabbeinu made, Hashem swore he will never destroy. So therefore, if Moshe Rabbeinu built the Beis HaMikdash, and then the Jews sinned, he couldn't destroy the building. He would have to destroy the Jewish people. So Hashem says, listen to me, I'm doing you a favor. Let Moshe Rabbeinu stay where he stayed. Let him not go into Eretz Yisrael. Let him not build the temple. Because then I could destroy a building, but not the Jewish people. So this is, it shows the, you know, with all this it says, you know, and the Mefarshim explain that what it means over here is that as bad as you are, you're still the chosen people. As now it became even a song, Benkach, Benkach, Banahim. The Gemara says, Amir Ameir, Benkach or Benkach, whether the Jews are good, whether the Jews are bad, I want you to know, Banahem, they're my kids. So therefore, they're still my kids. As bad as they are, they're my kids. So therefore, I will never destroy them. And as the Mefarshim explained, it's interesting that he brings down over here from the Meshech Chochmah that, you know, throughout the Golus, believe it or not, the Jews were well established wherever they went. in Bavel, in North Africa, in Spain, Germany, Eastern Europe, okay, they always re-established Torah centers. Wherever the Jews went, they established Torah centers throughout things, but, you know, it's still Golus. It's still the concept of Golus. It's still not the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore people have to know the only way to preserve them is with being religious. It's very interesting. I mean, a lot of people that are very Zionistic don't like to hear this, but the bottom line is, what kept Jews going throughout the ages, there were times, hundreds and hundreds of years, the Jews were not in Eretz Yisrael. They weren't allowed to be in Eretz Yisrael, right? For a long, long time, they wouldn't exist. But what united the Jews together was Torah and Mitzvahs. I mean, the bottom line, Torah and Mitzvahs united the Jewish people wherever they were. Wherever they were, the Jewish people had Torah and Mitzvahs. So it says, because sometimes Hashem says, like the Mefarshim explained, an interesting thing. Sometimes Hashem causes Jews to have it tough, to be oppressed and abused and all that, because then they stick together as a nation. When the Jews were tortured, communists, Iran, Hitler, I mean, all the Spain, all these times when the Jews were oppressed, that's when they stuck together and they built new places together of Yiddishkeit. Problem with America is too much freedom. You know, we're losing more to freedom than when the Jews were oppressed as Jews. So it says this is, even in Golus, we can see the positive hand that Hashem has in the relationship with the Jewish people. Okay, so then it says like this, in Pasuk Memhei, V'chuzuchayt lem b'ris v'sheinim, I remember the covenant of the earlier ones, Asher etzeisi eisa meretz Mitzrayim, that I took him out of Egypt. In other words, this is what Hashem promised the fathers of the 12 tribes, meaning Yaakov and his parents, Asher etzeisi eisa meretz Mitzrayim, that I liberated you from Egypt. And therefore, I'm telling you like this, Leinei ha'goyim liyos lo'am lelekim, to be their God, ani Hashem. Even times, okay, it says like this, the Ramban says that even during the times when Jews are in Golus, Hashem will still do miracles to Jewish people just to show the Goyim how great the Jewish people are. If you look in the world today, it's very interesting. The percentage of Jews versus the world population, but the highest offices and the power is all in the hand of the Jews, and the Goyim see that. They can't stand it. It causes anti-Semitism. But the bottom line is they see the Yad Hashem, the way the Jews are, whatever it is.
Shine.
Huh? Shine. Hashem pledges to the Jews, I took you out of Egypt, I made you my nation, since then you are mine. I like when you behave a little bit, but even if not, it doesn't matter. Okay, then the pasuk says like this. Ela hachukim v'mishpatim v'ateres. These are the chukim, the illogical mitzvahs, the mishpatim, the logical mitzvahs, v'ateres and the teres, plural, as we'll soon see. Asher nosen Hashem, that the God gave, b'nei uvein b'nei Yisrael, between him and the Jewish people, by Har Sinai, b'yad Meisha, in the hands of Meisha. It's a good, but we'll see in a second. It could be from what the Mefarshim explained over here, something else, so we'll answer that too. Okay, what does it mean? Ela chukim v'mishpatim v'ateiris. What are we talking about? Which ones?
Like the
Shabbos. Okay, no, so 1 second. Some Mefarshim, like this Sforna Rabag learned, this refers to all the mitzvahs so far given in Torah. Eila chukim, these are the mitzvahs, refers to all the mitzvahs from beginning to end. Rashbam refers only to the mitzvahs of Bahar Mechukaisei. Only those mitzvahs of the last two parshias. Shemitah, the slaves, and all that. And that's it. And because of those laws not kept, that's where the admonishment was. So some of us learn it refers to all the mitzvahs. Some of us learn only the mitzvahs that the Jews are punishable because of no Shemitah and all the other laws that we just learned in the last two parshas. But here there's a very interesting word that you can really explain on it for a very long time if you have a non-religious crowd, which we don't have. But it says teres, plural. Rashi says, what is the plural teres? Teres shebaksav and teres shebalpeh. Written Torah and oral Torah. Okay? Which it says, Rashi says, it's to emphasize that even the oral Torah was given at Har Sinai. Many people think, where does the oral Torah come from? A bunch of bored rabbis got together, and they got together, they were bored, and they just made up a bunch of laws, but it was man-made, it has nothing to do with Hashem, and so on and so forth. So Sam says, no. Eila michukim ha-mishpatim ha-teiris. Teiris refers to Torah Shebaksav, Torah Shebaalpeh. It refers to everything that Hashem gave. Both came from Har Sinai. Now, when Hashem gave the Torah, and this is a very important b'chol, I mean, this is one of the foundations of Yiddishkeit. When Hashem gave the Torah in Har Sinai, He gave two halves of the Torah. The written Torah and the oral Torah. He gave all the explanations of everything in the Torah, He gave to Moshe Rabbeinu. At the same time, He gave the Torah to Har Sinai. Everything was explained to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. What the rabbis did throughout generations was not create new laws. They expounded on the generalizations, on the klolim, on the general rules which were given at Har Sinai. They revealed details of those laws. But when you reveal a detail of the law was given at Har Sinai. And therefore, when it comes to Torah, anything that will develop in the world, anything that will develop in the world, whether medically, technologically, whatever it is, the answer to that will be found in the Torah. It will be found in the Torah. You need to know how to look. But anything that will exist in any time of history is to be found in the Torah. In other words, if a question comes up about technological things, the answer is in the Torah. It was given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't taught about the internet and Wi-Fi and all these things. Blackberries and all that. But in Torah, you will find the answer to everything that's to do with a Blackberry and iPad and Wi-Fis and technology and any medical issue that comes up. In the Torah, it was all given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. In general concepts. From the general concepts, you will be able to derive, the details, but the details were given to Moshe Rabbeinu already at Har Sinai. Okay, to give you this, you can talk about this for ages.
Did they give it to Moshe Rabbeinu? They didn't give it to
the details. No, but the details is only part of the general rule. Once you understand the general rule, yeah. I'll give you two examples. Okay, I just heard somebody was speaking lately about. I mentioned in Shuantim and Chamayim. Can you steal somebody's Wi-Fi? Okay, for I don't know what it is either, but. You don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's your access to internet. Like,
but you can get it outside your house. I can go outside your house and get. If you have an internet, I can get access to your internet. Okay. So let's say there's a shayla in halacha. Can I do that? Can I go outside your house and use the internet?
I'm not sure I want to hear this answer.
It's not halacha, right. One second. Or taking in the medical world, give one example, heart transplants. Are you allowed to do it? You're not allowed to do it? I mean, by the way, this is already old stuff. But I'm saying, these two general examples. So l'cheira, if you look in Chumash and Gemara, there's no discussion about heart transplants.
Or Wi-Fi.
So the question is, so where do you get the answers in Teda? But you do have the answers in Teda. Because, just to give you one example, in order to take a heart from somebody to do a transplant from the donor, you can't take a dead heart. You need a live heart. So how do they do a heart transplant without killing the person? So they say, in medical science, once a person's brain dead, even though respiratory is still working, the heart is still working, so therefore technically the person's dead, you're not killing them, you right away take out the heart, you keep it going, and then you could transplant that heart into a living person. Right? So that's basically the concept of it. So now, let's see if you're allowed to do it or not. And again, this is not halacha, this is just a discussion because there's too many details about it. The question is, am I allowed to do a heart transplant? So now, if the Torah defines death with a certain definition, then Torah would answer if you could do it or not. Let's say Torah defines death not as brain death, but as respiratory death, which is later than brain dead. If Torah says death by definition means when the heart stops and there's no thing, so then it's impossible to do a heart transplant because you can't take a dead heart, and if you take it out before that, you're killing the person. Okay? So now, does Torah rule about heart transplants? Yeah. Does the Torah talk about heart transplants? No. But for the general guidance of what death is, of what this is, of what that is, the Torah can rule, you can rule from Torah, what, or when does life begin? A lot of issues in medical halacha today, when does life begin? At what stage does life begin? Okay? So, that's the whole abortion issue. Okay? So, there are guidelines Torah gives that will answer any possible scenario that can possibly exist.
You can't take a heart from a Jewish person.
If it's dead, it's not working.
I know, but I'm just saying, I thought you had to be whole to be buried.
But that's also not so simple, because to save a life, are you allowed to? Okay. I didn't say that. This is a discussion to show that Torah Shebaal Peh, every aspect, not only Torah Shebaal Peh, every aspect that exists in the world originates in Torah. Or even just to discuss for a second the Wi-Fi issue. Can I take your Wi-Fi, right? Now the question is, what am I stealing? When is stealing stealing? Does it have to be something tangible? Or does it have to be not something tangible?
Well, there's also a second issue. If they left,
I'm not talking about secular law.
No, I'm just saying if a person leaves their Wi-Fi unsecure, everybody knows, and you've opened it up for the whole public to...
Who says? If I leave my door unlocked, means you can come in and steal?
No, everybody knows. If you don't.
I'm asking you a question. If I leave my door wide open, does that give you a right to steal?
No.
So what's this different? Forget the company. You understand what I'm saying?
It's not stealing for them. They're letting it happen for the
country. Made the individual.
The good of the country,
but the muscle. If I steal your thought or an idea, you had an idea. Again, I'm not talking about secular law. If you patent the idea, then it's a different story, okay? You have an idea. And you didn't patent the idea. You have a brainstorm. And you tell me your brainstorm. And I take it, and I go with it. Did I steal from you?
Yeah.
What did I steal? An object?
No.
Did I steal something tangible?
No.
So now the Torah has to define
what is stealing.
What mean is stealing?
What is stealing? If I steal something,
but it's about stealing.
But if I steal an idea, maybe it's not called stealing, because I didn't steal anything tangible. Do you understand? So, will Torah talk speak about why? No, but if you look into the rules, the klal of Torah, the general rule of Torah, you get into the details. Because if you understand the general rule as defined by Torah, for instance, let's say Torah says stealing is only when you steal something tangible, something physical. Okay? If it's something physical, then I have to pay. But if it's not physical, it's an idea, a concept, you know. The Gemara says, the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, if you say something in the name of the one you heard it from, you bring redemption to the world. Right? So there's a whole question in Halacha, and if I didn't, did I steal or not? Okay, I didn't bring Geula. I didn't bring Mashiach. But if I steal, you teach me something, yeah? And I say it over as if I said it. Is that called stealing or not? So there's the whole question in Halacha, what is considered stealing, what is not considered stealing. You can go on for this for years and years and years, I mean, because every detail you have. But the bottom line of it is that Moshe Rabbeinu, when he gave the Torah Shebiksav, Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu simultaneously the interpretation of it. If you look in the Chumash says, time for a sign on your hand and a sign between your eyes.
Frontlets,
between your eyes, okay. Who, what, when, where? Yeah? Another pasuk says, keep Shabbos. Who, what, when, where? Okay? This is Torah Shebal Peh, which was given to Moshe Rabbeinu simultaneously. The pasuk is saying, Torah Shebiksav, and Torah Shebal Peh is given to Moshe Rabbeinu Har Sinai. What happened was, it was transmitted orally, generation to generation to generation, until finally it was compiled in Mishnah, Gemara, Rishonim, Acharonim, you know, as Torah evolved. But it was all given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, and the only point is, it was transmitted orally. Hashem said, by the way, written Torah is not allowed to be said orally, and the oral Torah is not allowed to be formally written. Torah Shebal Peh, according to Halacha, it was allowed to be privately, you know, notes for myself, but to write Torah Shebal Peh, by the way, you know that according to Halacha, it's forbidden to say Chumash by heart, Tillim by heart, unless if it's Psukim that everybody knows, like davening, those types of things, then you're allowed to say by heart. But you can't just start reading Chumash by heart. Why? Because Torah Shebal Peh has to be written, and you're not allowed to say it orally. The oral Torah is not allowed to be written. How did Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi compile Mishnah? He wrote it down formally. He took a pasuk of Tillim that says, "Eis lasis l'Hashem meifedu teirasecha." There comes a time to save. Like the Rambam uses the analogy, to save a life, you sometimes have to amputate a limb. So Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi saw, if we don't write it down, there will be no Torah left. So it's better to. And he based on a pasuk in Tillim. It comes a time, Eis Lasis Lashem, in Kufyutas. It comes a time to Hashem, Hey Feiru Teirasach, where you need to nullify the Torah.
God didn't know that?
Huh?
At the time?
God knew it. So but God wanted it for a while like this. Nowadays, you can write Torah Shebal Peh. Nowadays, it's allowed to be, as we know, all the books that come out in Torah Shebal Peh are allowed to be written. Why? Because Hashem said, this is supposed to be written, this is supposed to be oral. I don't want them mixed. Written is written, oral is oral. Now, Halacha says, you're allowed to write the oral. What?
So since Moshe Rabbeinu, until Yehuda HaNasi, that compiled the Mishnah, we have about 1,000 years,
mm-hmm.
whatever it is. And people will say, when teachers transmitted it to the students, and to the teachers, and to the students, and so forth, things got a little bit changed, and inaccurate. So how do you want to tell me that for 1,000 years when you just give it
right
like that?
But you know what's interesting? The answer to that is, what's interesting is, after 1,000 years, Jews in all different parts of the world all had the same halacha. Not customs. Customs changed. Halacha was all the same.
It can be proven with other civilizations where they like do fortune telling by throwing down stones and sticks and
no
stuff. They have it memorized from their ancestors. I'm not saying they do real fortune telling, but in other civilizations, because they're transmitting it orally from generation to generation, and they have to rely on their memory, there it's actually can be more accurate than things written down, because they're more meticulous about making sure that they're accurate. It's proven in other civilizations.
Yeah, I mean, okay, that's also could be true. Yet, though there were groups of Jews that were exiled during the first Beis HaMikdash, she never made it back to the main. They say the Bnei Yisrael, the Ethiopian Jews, and the whole questions, if they're Jewish or not, if they're not Jewish, that whole issue, right? Part of it, the question is, because they were never with mainstream Judaism during the era of the Gemara, of the Mishnah and Gemara. So the question, did they know all the laws of marriage and divorce and conversions and all that? And that's why the whole question is, are they Jewish? Are they Mamzeinim? Are they not Mamzeinim? What the whole story is with them? That became because they weren't with mainstream oral tradition. And they might have had their tradition, but it's not necessarily the oral tradition which was transmitted generation to generation. But the interesting thing is, Jews, no matter which part of the world they were in, had the same halachas. Right, the halachas, not customs. I'm saying, customs, yeah, but the halachas, yeah, same. Yeah. What was allowed on Shabbos, was allowed, what wasn't allowed, and that's it.
I mean, the oral Torah is also now that it's written, being used by other religions, indirectly.
A Jew can't teach, according to halacha, non-Jews, the oral Torah, unless those mitzvahs that pertain to the seven Noahic laws. Seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach.
But the non-Jews, are they indirectly going and
learning?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's good or bad, but yeah.
It wasn't supposed to be.
In fact, I mentioned this. Years ago, there used to be, probably still is in New York, every Saturday night it was a Gemara class. Rabbi Teitz then gave a Gemara share every Saturday night. Thousands of people would listen to his Gemara share. Okay? And of course, the fanatic people that don't like when other people are doing something good, the fanatic Jews, I'm saying, they were screaming, how could he give a shir on the radio? Goyim are listening to it. And you're teaching the Goyim Torah, oral Torah, and you're not allowed to teach Goyim oral Torah. This was their complaint against him. Thousands of Jews were listening, it didn't matter. What were they afraid of? Maybe one guy who's going to tune into a Gemara shir, right? On a radio Saturday night. The Goyim at the movies, not the listening to a radio, the... So he says, this is ridiculous. What are you afraid of? You know, you're not teaching the guy. You give a class to Jews. If somebody gives a class, and the guy walks in, you have to throw him out and stone him. You're not teaching the guy. You're teaching the Jew. It happens to be, you have to throw him out. You don't have to throw him out. You know?
The same would apply with the internet. I mean, it's out there. It's geared towards Jews, but anybody can access the information.
Any guy can buy any book you want in the bookstore.
Maybe there is a reason that a
boy
wants to learn.
Maybe as a Jewish neshama.
Yeah.
Maybe he wants to convert. Yeah, that's all possible. Okay, anyway, everything was given. So now, to sum it up over here. The Ramban learns, the Ramban explains like this. We have the curses in this parsha. We have the curses in Parshas Kisavei. Okay, which is double the size of these. So the Ramban explains these two curses. One is for the first temple, one is for the second Beis HaMikdash. These curses in this parsha we just learned for an extended period of time, the Ramban says that was the first Beis HaMikdash. And therefore it speaks about not keeping Shemitah, not, that was all the sins of the first Beis HaMikdash. The second one was sin of chinam for no reason, hating Jews for no reason at all, those are the second curses in the book of Devarim. That corresponds with the second base of Mikdash. Okay, finish with that. Let's go on. Hashem spoke to Moshe. This is going to be the laws what's called Erchin. Now, Erchin means if a person donates their value to the Beis HaMikdash. A guy can come along and say, I donate $100 to the Beis HaMikdash or whatever it is. These Psukim are going to discuss like this. What happens if a person says, I donate what I'm worth, not in the Fortune 500, the value of my existence to the Beis HaMikdash. Not the financial worth. Guy says, I am donating my value to the base. Erki Olai. Says, my value that I'm worth, that's what I'm donating to the base of Mikdash.
What is different? My one is wealth.
His talents.
No. What? He said, whatever I'm worth.
After deducting all.
You ever see people tell you you're worthless? You're worth nothing.
Rabbi, aren't we all priceless?
Right. Oh, so this is what the Torah is going to discuss. That even though every person's priceless, but male from this age to this age is this amount of money, female this age to this age is this amount of money, younger, older, senior citizen. By the way, the value of male senior citizens goes down more than the woman's value of senior citizens. And Rashi from the Gemara has a very interesting comment about this. But the Torah is coming along basically and saying, in this respect, everybody's the same. You could be Moshe Rabbeinu, brilliant, stupid, rich, poor, healthy, sick, it doesn't matter. From this age to this age, male, X amount of money, female, X amount of money, this age to this age, X amount of money. In that respect, everybody is the same. Okay? But Erchin, I just want to preface this with a story with the Alter Rebbe. Erchin actually means, Erech means the value, the evaluation. The person says, I'm giving my evaluation, my value to the Beis HaMikdash. So there's a story told that there was a great chassid, he later was a chassid of the Mittal Rebbe and the Tzemach Tzedek, his name was Reb Hillel Paritcher. Originally he was not a chassid, and he was extreme, at 13, they say he was married at before 13, but at 13 he knew the entire Shas, Poskim, Codifier, Shulchan Aruch, and all of Kabbalah by heart at 13. I mean, this was what he was at the age of 13. Yeah. He's a very, very, very spiritual man. He was a miracle worker also. He heard that the Alter Rebbe was a very great man, and he wanted to meet him. He wasn't a chassid at that time, but he wanted to meet him. He was older already, but he wanted to meet the Alter Rebbe. And wherever he came, he always missed him. He came to a city, the Alter Rebbe left. He came to another. He always missed them. So one time, he thought of a brainstorm. He's going to find out the city the Alter Rebbe will be going to, where he's going to be staying. He's going to go into the room and hide under the bed. Foolproof. Foolproof way of meeting the Alter Rebbe. And he prepared, there's a whole tractate of Gemara basically based on these psukim called Erchin. It's a complicated Gemara. It's a whole Gemara called Erchin that deals with all the laws of evaluation. Because the Torah is going to speak about animals and fields, all these things of donating to the Beis HaMikdash. And he prepared a question in the Gemara of Erchin to ask the Alter Rebbe. Okay? So Mamish is under the bed, he's ready to go. As soon as Alter Rebbe comes in, he's going to pop out and see him and talk to him. So Alter Rebbe walks into the room. The Alter Rebbe said in Yiddish it's much richer, the expression. Before he had a chance to say something, the Alter Rebbe said that a young man that has a question in the Gemara of evaluation should first evaluate himself. The Alter Rebbe walked into the room before he even had a chance. The Alter Rebbe said, a young man that has a question in the Gemara of evaluation should first make a self-evaluation. When he heard that, he fainted. And he still missed him. And the Alter Rebbe left and he missed him. But it's an interesting concept. Before you evaluate somebody else, so to speak. You want to test me to see, you know, the Alter Rebbe is telling a lesson for us. You want to evaluate somebody else, you know, say, oh, you're good. First evaluate yourself, and then you have a right to evaluate somebody else. Okay, let's see this inside now. Hashem.
718.
This is an article? Yeah, and that's stone. Okay. One, the Mefarshim explained, by the way, what's the connection between the admonishment and donating to the Beis HaMikdash? Okay? So Shem Shafal Hirsch says a very interesting thing. He said, don't think that you can get rid of all these curses by giving gifts to the temple. You know, don't think I can sin, do whatever I want, and then I'll write a check. You know, to the, Hashem telling us over here, don't think the gifts are going to get rid of this. It's not going to happen. Okay? Now, another thing we need to understand also over here, there's two types of donations that somebody can make to the Beis HaMikdash. There's something that's called Kedushas HaGuf, and this is important for the upcoming Pesukim. There's something called Kedushas HaGuf, and there's something called Kedushas Domim. The Kedusha of the body of the object, or the Kedusha of the money. Which means like this. If somebody has a chair, and they're in a good mood, and they say, I am donating this chair to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? What happens is, the monetary value of the chair is what becomes holy. Therefore, I have to give the chair to the Beis HaMikdash, right? Now, what's the Beis HaMikdash going to do with it? If they need it, they'll use it. But if they don't need it, Beis HaMikdash will sell it. Then the money becomes holy, which is used for the temple, and the chair becomes unholy. Okay? If an animal was allowed to be brought on the Mizbeach, meaning the kosher animal which was fit as a carbon, and somebody says, I'm giving this animal as a carbon, then the body of the animal has to be used as a carbon. Then the body is called Kedushas HaGuf. The body became holy, and therefore, the different, you know, this becomes the property of the Beis HaMikdash, and this becomes the, so to speak, the Mizbeach, has to be brought as a carbon on the Mizbeach. That's the difference between the various types of gifts that somebody gives.
Anymore, you cannot change it to money to make it holy.
Right.
Now, what if they give something and then it turns out that it's not like, kosher enough to be a carbon?
So then
they find
a blemish.
Yeah, a blemish.
Well, it depends.
They can set it and the money going.
It depends. And there's also an interesting, it's not going to be here, it's in a different part of Chumash. If somebody says, I'm consecrating, meaning a makdish, an animal to the Beis HaMikdash. The guy says, I'm donating a sacrifice to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? And he brings an animal to the Beis HaMikdash, and they're checking it out, and it has a blemish.
So he can bring something else.
He has to bring something else.
So he didn't specify that.
But he has to bring something else.
Okay.
What happens if a guy says, I am consecrating this animal? Harei zu eila.
He says,
one second. And then they find something wrong with the animal, he's off the hook. He doesn't have to bring another one. If he says in Hebrew, in the Mishnah term, if he says, Harei alai eila, I have to bring a carbon ola. And then he takes an animal and it's no good, he has to bring another one. But if he says, Harei zu eila, this is a sacrifice and something's wrong with it, or an animal dies on the way, whatever it is, that's it. He doesn't have to bring another one.
That's because on the Wednesday night you said the Tamiglash is the only place that once you say it, who cares?
Wednesday night, that's the woman's class.
No, but Tuesday night. Yeah, Tuesday night.
No, your wife comes Wednesday night. Yeah, once you say it, you can't change your mind. No, but I'm saying, but if I say this animal I'm bringing as a gift, and then the animal dies, I don't have to bring another one. Because I only consecrated this animal. I didn't obligate myself to bring an animal.
Yeah, would it make any difference, like if you're doing it for, as a korban for something?
No, if I have to bring a sin offering, I'm talking about donation korbanis.
Okay.
Obligatory sacrifices, sin offerings. That you have to bring regardless. If you have sinned and you have to bring a korban, and the animal died along the way, you have to bring another one.
So you couldn't really,
I'm talking about donations.
Right, but you couldn't specify only.
No. Because the Torah obligates you to bring a sin offering. Until it's brought, it's not brought. The animal died, it's your tough luck. I mean, you know. You have to bring another one.
If you say this animal is hektosh, and the animal dies, and you're off the hook.
Right.
You keep the animal, or Beis HaMikdash keeps the animal?
No, who keeps the dead animal?
Mm-hmm.
The Beis HaMikdash. It's theirs.
Right.
I mean, they could sell it for whatever, you know, whatever.
So if practically, if somebody says that, for instance, whatever, the guy with the owns the IBM, whatever, says, you know, I'm planning to donate $1 million, and something happens to this company,
and bankruptcy.
And before a bankruptcy or something like that, then
there's no bankruptcy in halacha. There isn't. There's no concept of bankruptcy in halacha.
No,
so
he owes $1 million.
He owes $1 million.
He owes.
Sure.
And if he dies,
I'll tell you a little secret.
If he dies, the children
have an obligation to pay it from the estate.
The children. Have
to. Okay, forget California law. Forget American law. According to halacha, nothing personal. Women.
Yeah.
Women don't own prop money. It belongs to the husband. Right?
But they own the husband.
They own the husband, yeah. But the money, no, according to halacha. Again, if it's community property, halacha is different.
She earns the
money? If a woman, there is certain obligation, husband to wife and wife to husband. Okay? He brings in the money, she produces it. As Gemara says, he brings home the wheat, she makes it into bread. Okay. So, according to halacha, he has to support her with X, Y, and Z, and this. Therefore, any money she owns belongs to the husband. That's the rule. Okay? Now, because of that rule, what happens if somebody's wife, just going with the premise of that law, what happens if somebody's wife takes a stone and breaks somebody's window? Now, if you damage somebody, you have to pay, right? You have to pay damages, right? Simple halacha, tells us. Now, the woman has no money because of whatever she owns goes to the husband, right? The husband doesn't have to pay for his wife. I'm not responsible for what my wife does. She broke her window. It's not me. I didn't do it. So halacha says, what's this halacha? Let's say she cost somebody $500 damage, yeah? The din is, she has a debt of $500. She has no money now to pay. If she gets divorced, or the husband dies, well then she has her own money because there's no husband, she has to pay the debt. According to biblical law, not civil law, which changes halacha law today, if a kid breaks your window, again, halacha today is different because of government law, okay? But according to halacha, if a kid breaks your house, breaks the window, whatever, the parents don't have to pay. The kid also doesn't have to pay. Because he's not responsible for his actions. He's not bar mitzvah. Or bas mitzvah. Therefore, that kid, even when they become an adult, they don't have to pay. They don't have to pay. In court. The right thing is the kid gets older, you know. But halachically, you can't obligate a kid. But the wife does have to pay. Because she's responsible if she's bas mitzvah, unless she married a 5-year-old. But if she's bas mitzvah, then she's responsible, but she has no money, so it becomes a debt. If a guy, coming back to your case, if a guy promises $1 million to the Beis HaMikdash, right, and then he goes broke, there's a debt.
Is it deferred interest free?
There's no interest in halach.
That's right.
But how is it that if the animal dies, he doesn't owe to bring, doesn't have to bring the
because
animal.
He said this animal. If a guy, one second.
$1 million.
Oh! If a guy has, no. If a guy has a sack of money on the table, The guy has a bag of money on the table.
No, not stakan.
That's all different
stock
story.
Option is not.
No, one second. A guy has a bag of money on the table.
Gold.
A bag of gold, the money, what's the difference? Okay? And he says, I'm donating this bag of money to the Beis HaMikdash. And then somehow got lost, it fell down the ocean, whatever, then you don't have to pay. But if a guy says, I'm donating $1 million, that's on him, on his body, is the obligation of $1 million. It doesn't matter if you have it or not. You have a debt that you have to pay whenever the time comes. There's no bankruptcy in halacha, by the way. Just for the record.
7 years, what the 7 years?
That's
after 7 years, you get...
Shemitah doesn't work by Hegdish. Hegdish doesn't, Shemitah... No, it says in the Chumash, Shemitah doesn't work by Hegdish.
That's bankruptcy, though, in Jewish law.
No, there isn't.
What?
There isn't.
No, I'm saying that, I think that the what do you call it, the 49th year...
The Shemitah, no, 7th
like
year.
Equivalent to the bank.
It's not. It's not.
But everything resets.
Why do any oil after 7 years is... Finish. 7 years. What's 7 years?
If the guy makes a pros bowl, he owes the money anyway.
What about land? Land goes back to
by the way, it's only by debts, not by other things also. I don't know. It doesn't work by everything, Shmita. Okay, let's just start this. Speak to the Jews. Tell them like this. Ish kiyafli, if a man articulates, and this is very important, neder be'erkuchon nefashas l'Hashem, if a man articulates a vow to Hashem regarding evaluation of human beings. Now, number one, the Gemara learns out from this pasuk that it has to be verbally. Okay? The only time a neder becomes halachically bound is if you say it. Okay? And you have to understand what you're saying. And you have to know what you're saying. Okay? And it's a human term, meaning whatever the normal terms of people speaking, that's what it applies to. So, for instance, if a person says, my value, so then it depends what age you are, male, female, like we're going to learn. What happens if I say, I'm donating to the Beis HaMikdash your value? The Gemara uses the expression, demei ploini alai.
What do you mean your value? I don't understand that.
I say, if I would say, I'm not saying it, but if I would say, I am donating your value to the Beis HaMikdash.
What's value?
Oh, so the Torah is going to describe what the value is. It depends how old you are, male, female, young, old, middle age.
They put prices in the...
Yeah, but everybody's the same. That's what the chiddush is.
But here you switch from, instead of my value, I want to say your value.
Right, okay, either way. If I say my value, it's my value. If I say your value, it's your value. But I can't obligate you to pay. If I say, upon me is to give your value to the Beis HaMikdash. So then it goes by your age, not by my age. So it's a very simple concept. Or we have a similar case. We learned before in Parshas Mishpatim, if somebody gores an eved, a slave, the Torah says, Kesef shleishim shkolim yitan ladainav. You give 30 shekels to the master. And the Gemara says, whether the eved is worth $1, $1 million, it doesn't matter. The Torah says, 30 is 30, no matter what the value of the eved is. No matter how valuable the slave is. You give $30. In this pasuk, the Torah is teaching us the age of a person, how much their value is, if they don't know. But it's only if you articulate it.
And it's only applicable to the Jewish people?
We'll see.
As a slave coming?
The Aruch Haim, we'll see that. Not now, next week, obviously. Next week. The person, by a non-Jew, it doesn't apply.
And if you're in your thoughts, you're thinking that, well, you know, I think I'm going to go ahead and donate.
If you think it,
this is the common value.
It says in halacha, even by tzedakah, by the way, it says, you're not obligated until you verbally say it, but if you think it, it's better to keep it.